Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape, if only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in who we are today. Now, get ready for Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets, and we are part of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in our group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can chat with us and read the poems along with us. I'm Afaziana, and with me I have my co-host, Daniel Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, you do have me. I am here.
Yay!
And
we also
beyond
have...
sleepy, but excited.
Well, I'm glad that you're here, even though you're sleepy. And we have Lord with us as well.
Hey,
I think
Lord.
I heard your laugh. Right?
Yeah. Hello?
Hello.
All right. I didn't hear me. I didn't hear myself go off mute. I wasn't sure if I was on or not. Great to hear both
of you. You are now. You too.
Absolutely.
It's been a while.
You too.
Yeah, trying to rectify that situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're back in action after two shows away. So that's exciting for me that we're here again. And we're going to be doing the poems from the contest that Dan had about male role models. And I also had one with female role models, but unfortunately did not get very many rights. But we have lots from the male role models one, and it had Bob Ross saying, be kind to yourself, and Mr. Rogers saying, be kind to others. We had Steve Irwin saying, be kind to animals. David, what's his last name, Dan?
Attenborough,
thank you, saying be kind to the earth. Weird Al saying be kind of weird. And Lamar saying read a book. So that is some of my favorite dudes to look up to, but we also allowed for people to pick their own role models outside of that.
Dude, we actually really missed two shows in a row.
We did.
Wow, I'm so sorry. No, mm-hmm. I was one of the ones at least. We were both texting back. I'm like, I'm really – one show at least, we were both kind of not with it that well. But, all right, yeah, I am very glad I'm back. I actually have two, if you don't mind, two poetry-type things I wouldn't mind sharing with everybody. I did my first.
Really?
So the town I live in, Malden, Massachusetts, actually has a poet laureate. And she got some poets together, and I did my very first live poetry reading in front of an audience about a week ago.
Yay!
Which was exciting. Yes, I did. I read some poetry from my book and did an improv. I'm sure I stunk up the place like a bean burrito dinner at an old folks home, but I did the best I could. And, it was fun. So that was interesting. And then today I got a call from Warner Brothers Studios saying, we'd like to buy your book and make it into a movie for $10,000. And I said, you want to buy my book of poetry and make it into a movie for $10,000? Really? I said, okay, I'm game. I never heard of that scam before. Has anybody ever heard of that scam before?
I mean, I imagine they browse Amazon looking at, like, self-published and small publisher works being a scam, but that would be like so exciting and then disappointing to realize it was a scam.
Yeah.
Well, if it's that good, then it can't be real.
There's no way it's real. I mean, it was some, you know, no offense to anybody, it was a Asian sounding guy with a bunch of noise in the background, obviously a whole bunch of telemarketers or whatever they are, and I asked him, how'd you get my number? He said, well, you're on Amazon. I don't have my number on Amazon. How did you get my number? Like, what's going on here? And he started, I just said, okay, I'm game, go ahead. And he just started asking me all kinds of personal information. I'm like, all right, dude, have a good life. Have Spielberg call me and we'll talk. I never heard of that scam before. I mean, I don't know what they were going to get out of it, but, and, you know, I don't know. Anyway, that was an interesting one.
Wow. I mean, glad you caught it. Like, Amazon doesn't have my phone number, I don't think. So I'm like, definitely not posted publicly. There's no, I don't know.
I caught it within the exact second they said, I'm calling from Warner Brothers. And I said, no, you're not. Like, what? What the hell is happening?
No way.
In the world today. Like, yeah, that's not a thing. You know.
Well, I'm still really proud of you for doing the read aloud. The live show, that's awesome.
Yes, my first one ever, and you know, it was all a bunch of you know, poet weirdos, so I fit right in perfectly. They're all a bunch of great people. It was fun, actually. There was actually an audience and everything. Like, people actually showed up and listened, and it was kind of fun. They actually do it in my town. I guess every other Monday they have at the local. I don't know if you guys have this in your towns, but they have, you know, the local town television. And I guess they actually do live poetry readings on the local TV every other Monday, so I might try it. So you might see me on YouTube reading live poetry.
That's awesome. All right, I'm going to have to look for that.
But anyway.
If you get the link, send it to me.
I'll post it on Instagram. I'll send it.
There's one that's sort of like that in a neighboring town, and I used to go to it, but they've moved it to the exact same time as this show.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we could do the show. You could do the show live on television. That would be fun, right? No, they won't let you do that.
No, it's not actually TV. It's just like at an art gallery, but like there's a pretty big audience.
Oh, cool. But. Ew. We should get started, probably.
I suppose so. I'm going to start with one by Ben Hart.
Let me guess, you're going to read it.
I am. I have claimed reading all of Ben's poems. I've claimed him. Okay.
It's okay.
Time to Go by Ben Hart. I am not sick. I am the disease. Maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe fear always belonged in the eyes of the destroyer. Anonymous. I named the only part of me I liked Ben, but the fractured whole goes by a name that you twist into Arnold. And that is not a happy name for a cold-blooded creature such as I, who only warmth in the world is touched of beauty. Hi, my name is not exactly Arnold, and I am an addict. And in a world that never understood me, I am sad to say, I've always belonged. Limbo. I am so sorry to the rest of me for all of it, for him, the man I let us become, choosing exile over death. We built the cathedral around us, but his gargoyles weighed their way in and drowned the flock. I will avenge us, and from the rubble and the blood of all our collapsed faith, raise the armies of hope. Charge the gates of limbo, unmask our tormentor, and fly home. Torture. I am all that cares for you in this infinity of unknowns, the only one to ever heal your weary, and you never cared what it cost before another day. So what kind of hero are you to let them all perish before you, so desperate to dig your shadow from the wall and take its place? Pathetic. You cannot defeat me. You are a boy, not a man. You are nothing. For you, there's no way out but the one I divined. Overgrowth. You think you're the only one? Who didn't have the luxury of growing through the concrete to rejoice in the light because someone had to hold the house together? You're not. You're us. It's the only job you ever showed up for, the only promise that mattered, and it cost you everything to keep it. All the while, you live only to convince yourself they do not need you. Just breathe, kid. Their war is over. But guess what? They'll fight for you, if you fight for you. It's all you've ever known. Just fight. And you'll get there in no time. I fucking promise. It's just like going to sleep and waking up on the right side of the mirror. It's peace. It's a peace even death couldn't do justice. So fight. Relapse. You got out. You got out. Why are you back here? You got out. Truth. I started smoking weed at 16 to enjoy things again. I don't remember when I gave that up. I don't remember when the sadness crept back in. It's funny, or maybe it really isn't, that now I tell myself she won't follow me home, that she won't beat me to the bottom of every beer can, when I know damn well she'll be there, in the eyes of every passerby named Pretty. But still, I know it's time to go get better. And you watch. What a frighteningly beautiful life awaits when the Frisian eagle heals his wings and returns to those amphitheater skies. So in a way, this is goodbye. But really, it's only the silence before the storm. Hoist the colors and keep your eyes trained on the north. It's still going to be a wild fucking ride. But I promise, this time, I'm coming home. End poem.
Awesome read. And Ben says, in his author's notes, be kind to yourself. Maybe the Dutch are a bit too Dutch for role models, but if I have to share some people, I'll let you guys list it. But he basically lists all his family, which is really amazing. I always list, celebrities and musicians and people as role models or celebrities, it's not like TV stars, but, whoever. The people you're closest to are your role models, meaning you do become so much like them. You just really do. So listing all of his family I thought was amazing. And then he also lists, and of course, Kenobi, meaning Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, which if you can understand that, look up Maul's death in Rebels. but the rest of Star Wars is integral to me, and I agree too. I mean, it's, you know, those type of things make a big impact on you. You know, I was old enough to have seen the very first Star Wars in the theater, and just it's been, you know, so it's been basically part of my life since I've been 10 years old. And the philosophies and everything mean a lot, but I feel you on all that, Ben. But anyway, I love this. So this got the gold in the contest, and well-deserved, Ben. I like that basically it's himself that is his inspiration. I'm just going to kind of pick on some little parts here. So the beginning part, I'm not sick, I'm the disease. Maybe that's the way it is, but maybe fear always belonged in the eye of the destroyer. Fear is interesting, and we are our own, you know, we are our own problems. I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been thinking a lot about manipulation, and what I realized is that we're not only manipulated by everything around us, we're manipulated by ourselves, because we've had so much input into us that is now becoming us, that we, our emotions almost basically manipulate ourselves, which is really interesting. Where's that part? So it's always fun trying to find the part you're looking for in Ben's poems. Where was it here? I won't stay too long with that. I really like the discussion he has of himself. In the section torture here, I'm all that cares for you in this infinity of unknowns, the only one to ever heal you weary, and you never care to what cost before another day. And so what kind of hero are you? And that is really the question. You know, as much as we all love each other, we're there. Again, there's something else I was thinking about too, Ben. We must be on the same wavelength, my friend. Is no matter who you're with, no matter how long you're with your loved ones, whatever it is, you're still in this life alone, right? You just are. You have to go through things by yourself. You know, Jim Morrison said, no one gets out of here alive. And I say no one gets out of here alive. And everyone gets out of here alone. It's something you have to go through. But in the end result, we're all in it here. You know, we all have to take care of ourselves. We're all in this life, you know, having to do what we need to do. And, you know, what kind of hero are you to yourself is really the key. I mean, that was the line that I really liked a lot, is that's what you have to think of. You can have all these heroes and role models, but are you one for yourself, right? Are you the role model? Are you the one that's inspiring yourself to do what you need to do? So really great. I love this one. Well-deserved gold, Ben. Really glad to give it to you. Yeah, so great. And, oh, Ben, by the way, who always puts work of his own artistry with the poems, because he was talking about himself, put a picture of himself, handsome guy that he is, on the poem, which I thought was great. Thanks for sharing that, Ben. Awesome job. He's on Instagram. You should all follow him if you can. He's probably on other social medias as well. Laurent, what is going on, my friend?
Well, I really enjoyed your take on Ben's great poem. And Viviana, I can see you have taken him to your heart. I'm jealous, but that's all right. You do him justice. I can't disagree with anything you've said. There's so much of him in this piece all the way through and almost from different points of view. I think as if the people in his family members were the ones speaking instead of him. In number four, the overgrowth, you think you're the only one who didn't have the luxury of growing through the concrete, rejoice in the light, because someone had to hold the house together. You're not, you're us. It's the only job you ever showed up for, the only promise that mattered, and it cost you everything to keep it. I enjoy his poetry because it's open, it's honest, it's vulnerable. He's so good at exposing himself in a way that draws us to him. There's nothing in all of the ills and issues that repels us. Rather, it pulls us to him, you know, in support of what he went through and how he writes about it. And then later on in that bit, I fucking promise it's just like going to sleep and waking up on the right side of the mirror. It's a peace even death couldn't do justice to fight. What a spirit there is in this. Survivor spirit. Great, great piece. Well worthy of a goal.
Thank you, Laurent. And Quicken is on the board, by the way. So, hey, Quicken, thanks for joining us. And go for it, Faizy. What's your thoughts?
I loved it. I always love reading his and getting to be the person to read out loud because just it flows. And, you know, like was just said, I agree. It's open and it's honest and vulnerable. There's this rawness to it that I really enjoy. My favorite part was, actually, I don't even know if it's my favorite part because I like so many of them, but part that stands out to me is so desperate to dig your shadow from the wall and take its place. Maybe because I just recently did this kind of therapy course about, like, accepting your shadow side and recognizing that, you know, everyone has that kind of darkness within them and different aspects of themselves and, you know, owning that and just being all of you. And he talks about, like, how the part he likes about himself is Ben, but there's the other part, the part that is an addict, the part that does other things, and then wanting to dig your shadow from the wall and, like, put something better there is a strong statement. So I don't know if that's actually what he meant, but that's how I took that part. And I do like in the AN that he gives a shout-out to those people who were role models to him as well. This is beautiful. I can see why it got gold.
Yes, yes.
And now I will put Laurent to work, and will you please read the poem by Robert J. Tice?
I'll be happy to. Learning the Art of Life. The Sanctuary Studio. Humble painter teaches peace with patience near medicinal, a kindness like a therapy that remedies contagious angst. Now healing is revealing my ignorance may be absolved. What I haven't mastered yet delivers me from emptiness. Life's canvases await my paint. We need not fear to get this wrong. One mishap may become the chance to stumble something new, develop it, express, explore, and realize there's always more. Creation gains us liberty. We're free to dabble, splatter, sweep, observe as brushstrokes take their place within a mountain or face, or note how tones blend harmony. We'll usher rivers if we wish, or raise a lighthouse in the night, shape breaking waves, long snowy hills, a sunlit cabin near the woods. The slightest trying owns our skills, not just for here, but all our days. Because time's easel knows no edge. No point when paint falls meaningless. Truth's medium is anything. See artistry in everything. End poem.
Fantastic read. Thank you. This is awesome. I really enjoy this poem. I think it does Bob Ross justice. It really shows his philosophy of forgiving yourself if you make a mistake and just making the best out of it. you know, who's famous for the, oh, let's just make it a little bird kind of thing. And Robert says that so eloquently here. My ignorance may be absolved if what I haven't mastered yet delivers me from emptiness. You know, don't avoid trying new things because you're afraid of doing it wrong, because you don't want to do something you're not good at, because you have to do it when you're not good at it to be able to get good at it. And you have to be able to forgive yourself that if it's delivering you from emptiness, you never have to get good at it for it to be valuable. Painting can be just for your own sense of peace and enjoyment. Writing can be just for what it does for you. It doesn't have to be marketable. And I feel like there's this gig culture now where it's like everyone wants their hobbies to make them money. Like, if you're knitting, you're trying to sell it. If you're doing anything, people are trying to make money off of it. And I know it's because, you know, we're broke and we need it. But at the same time, doing it just for the sake of doing it, to teach peace with it, and allow yourself to not be perfect, is just beautiful. I really liked patience near medicinal. And it is, to have someone be so patient, to watch Bob Ross's patience and to learn his attitude, is it actually really is medicinal. I've recently started to meditate, which I always kind of scoffed before, but I'm not good at it at all because my thoughts wander. And then there, I have this one that I'm following, and he says, if your thoughts wander and you're not really paying attention, forgive yourself. That's normal. And so I'm just like, okay. So I like that guy because he's like, are you not paying attention? Me either. And you have to let yourself not be great at things. That in itself can be healing. So thank you very much, Robert, for this excellent piece. What did you think, Dan?
I agree. I like what you say about art just for the sake of doing art. I can honestly say that is why, well, I started poetry to try to put something positive in the world during the pandemic, but it became cathartic for me, and I did try to, you know, make money off it, but it's just, I put it out there. And it's funny, you know, I've been playing drums for so long, right? And people ask me all the time, like, I go down to the practice spaces that we have, and I play, and they're always asking me, you know, what are you working on? Are you guys playing a gig? And I go, no, I'm just playing. And people say, so you're correct. I get weird looks from people, like, what do you mean you're just playing? Like, sometimes they almost don't even understand that, which I don't get with music. Like, I will go down and just bang around, you know, just by myself, you know, just for the sake of playing. And, you know, I'm definitely seeing the other way around now. I'm seeing a lot of young musicians playing just to play. I'm seeing that coming around, so I think that's good. But I do understand that culture you're saying. And I did really like the, you know, this won the silver. Robert won the silver on this one. And we need not fear to get this wrong. One hit mishap may become a chance to stumble upon something new, develop. You know, when you are playing art, when you're doing art, it's not about getting it wrong. You know, it's about just expressing yourself and seeing what happens. You know, again, as somebody's been playing drums a long time, I don't really have to think about it. I just kind of play, and I actually don't know what's going to happen. But to me, that's the adventure part of it. I just start playing around. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. Like, that's a neat rhythm. And I believe that's how it is a lot of times with painting. If you're, you know, you might have an idea of what you're doing, but you kind of see how it comes around. It's not about making mistakes. I just thought this was really a beautiful, I wonder, Robert, you gotta write and let me know if you actually do paint. It seems like you do. It seems like you really understand it. On the very end, truth's medium is anything. See artistry in everything. And I really like the ending of that too. So excellent job, Robert. Great to see you in the contests. Laurent, you did an amazing job reading it. What do you think?
I really appreciate this piece. It absolutely supports everything I know about the persona of Bob Ross. He espoused such an It's simple. It's subtle. Plain talking kind of approach to life that allows us to give ourselves grace. Well, you said it earlier, one mishap may become the chance to stumble onto something new. In the previous poem, you know, as we were talking about the person being able to forgive himself, that's exactly what he says here. He was a remarkable individual in this poem. Perfectly balances everything that he did. You quoted one line. Another one that grabbed me was that creation gains us liberty. You know, to be a creator, poets are creators. Musicians are creators. Sculptors, painters, all the obvious things, ways to create. And as you said, creation, if only for yourself, give yourself something to fill up the empty spaces. It's valuable, but lo and behold, all of a sudden you find that you're good at something, and you can really develop, and it becomes the main thing in your life. And if you can earn a living at it, God bless, well, you're never going to work again because you're doing something you love, and that's not work. It's a great piece.
Thank you. Great comment. I appreciate it. And Robbie's poetry is on the board. Thanks.
Hey, Robbie.
Robbie, as always. All right, we got people here. And we got Weird Al. For some reason, I think, or it's not one on Weird Al. Did I miss that? No, that's, the next one, which I believe Faizy wants me to read. I think that's a hint, having me read one about Weird Al.
Uh-huh.
She thinks I'm strange.
I only like strange people. It's all good.
I appreciate it. I got to give credit for it. So I'll read this one by Curtis Meyer. I'll give credit to Faizy. She actually came up with a contest. I posted it. And what she did with Weird Al, I sent her a picture. I had of all the people on here, I actually got to meet Weird Al at a Comic-Con, who was a great guy. So it was a pleasure to meet him. Definitely one of my heroes growing up. I love his stuff. Anyway, Sonnet, Ode to Weird Al. All hail great Alfred Matthew Yankovic, known throughout countless kingdoms as Weird Al, purveyor of parody, comic shtick. Many outsider does he corral, old piper, jester, storyteller, bard, commander of nerd armies at your whim. Our battalions stand as your royal guard. Accordions echo your battle hymn. O geek emperor, champion of our masses, we your followers pledge and do comply. You may have ditched the mustache and glasses. Damn it, Al, you're still our type of guy. For decades, our halls resound with your name. If only Coolio could say the same in poems.
Nice read. Thank you, Dan. This just made me think that I can't believe I didn't do an opening song by Weird Al. What is wrong with me? Okay. It's such a missed opportunity.
Yes.
It's hitting me now, like, no. Okay, well, if we ever do another Weird Al contest, which I can see myself doing with quotes, then we have to play something by him. I really like the recognition of, like, who he really is, his real name, who he appeals to. You know, he's the champion of the geek masses, which includes me. And then, like, the role that he plays, the piper, the jester, the storyteller, the bard. Because while people tend to think of, like, bards as, like, more traditional, like maybe you picture Shakespeare, actually, bards were very silly. They would tell important stories through humor to make it accessible as they went from, like, place to place. So he's such a perfect bard, and he often does have a message in his silly version of things. It is actually challenging to write parodies the way that he does. I have tried many times. And nobody does it like him. So I thought this was a nice credit to him. That he made it into a sonnet is just really fun because it's a formal style to talk about an informal guy and using kind of like casual language. So it's an interesting mix of things that I thought was really appropriate for the content. Thank you, Curtis. And Lamont, what did you think?
I think you did a fine job, and I like the idea of the sonnet, something very formal surrounding something that is chaotic and informal at times. I also wondered what a person named Yankovic could do with a name. I've got to say that Weird Al fits it perfectly somehow. You know, many a bard in days of yore also played the fool, and they were also truth tellers, the king. They would come and, you know, you can't thumb your nose at a king and tell him he's wrong. But in the act of singing, you can. And so somebody like Weird Al, within his humor, within his stories, lies many truths. I appreciate that. Appreciate the poem.
Well said. Dan.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. One of the reasons I respected Weird Al a long time ago is that anybody remember the old show Solid Gold, which was kind of like an American Bandstand, except they just had like dancers and bands would go on. So Weird Al was on Solid Gold, and he's the only band I ever saw that actually played live on there. They actually played their instruments. They were plugged in. And he played the song Eat It, if you know that song, and he did a banana-eating solo, which I thought was great. So during the solo, during the guitar solo, he sat there and just ate a banana. He ate the whole banana, too. During the solo, he actually ate the whole thing, which I thought was great. So I always respect him. If you've ever seen him, I've never seen him in concert, but I've seen the videos. He's amazing. He does, like, all of his stuff live. So like when he does the Jedi song, I forget which one it is. They all dress up like Jedi. He puts his fat suit on for Edith. Like he actually gets in the costume for all. That's pretty amazing. And if anybody doesn't know the Coolio reference, I believe that Coolio's song Gangster Paradise, he did Amish Paradise, and I guess Coolio was supposedly Weird Al got permission. But then it got back that Coolio didn't want permission and basically threatened him, basically said, watch out, you'll come near me, like, watch out, Al, I'm going to get you. Like, he was just really mad. And then, you know, so there's a little bit of a feud between Coolio and Al, I think. So, yeah, if you guys can look that one up. I don't think it's the same as, you know, hopefully Vanilla Ice and whatever happened with that whole thing, if you know that story. But hopefully they worked it out. But yeah, this was fun. It was great. I hit all the points. I really enjoyed it. It was great. Thanks, Curtis. Alrighty, who is the next inspiration we're gonna play with here?
Okay, so this poem is by Lockdown Larks, and it says he is referencing Giles Paley Phillips. In Kind by Lockdown Larks. If there was a mantra for human mind, filling every neuron space, if it were the need to be kind, could that define the human race, be inclined to be kind? It is so easy just to be, thinking of our own ego. If all we see is me, 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 then we'll always be toe to toe. Don't be blind to be kind, to being kind. There are those who live on the street, be it choice or circumstance. How many could get back on their feet? Someone needs to give them a chance. Humanity is entwined, just being kind. Why join in the media game? If it is breeding negativity, why only seek out who to blame? If it polarizes hostility, don't malign, instead be kind. What would you have done to you? Look in the mirror and reflect. Have you done all you can do to share just a little respect? Mirror power aligned. Reflect being kind. I'll look out for you. You look out for me. This mantra all could do to define humanity. A friend you'll always find. Being kind. And pull.
Excellent job. If I was a little kid, Faziana, I would love listening to you read. That's all I got out of that one. That reminded me of nice little kid's book. Extremely professionally written. But I liked it. I like Lockdown Locks a lot. And I'm not familiar with Giles Paley Phillips, but I'll have to look him up. If it were the need to be kind that could define the human race, be inclined to be kind. Imagine that, if that was our definition of a human race as being kind. Unfortunately, I don't believe that's what it is, especially just, I don't know, I've had discussions with the Faziana. It's the world doesn't seem like that way much, and this is definitely something that we need. Again, imagine just, you know, like obviously John Lennon said in Imagine, right? I like the bold-faced, italic end sentences, kind of almost read them together. Be inclined to be kind. Don't be blind to be kind. Human entwined, humanity entwined, just be kind. Don't malign, instead be kind. Mirror power aligned, a friend you'll always find. So a nice little poem within a poem, which I always find. I haven't tried that yet, and I'm always fascinated when people do that. I think that was you know, very clever luck for Lockdown Locks. But it's a beautiful message. I mean, I love this. This is something, Lockdown, that you should be posting around. Post it on, if you're on any kind of social media, post it, because this is a kind of a message that people really need. You know, to say, are you actually kind? Do you remember doing that? And it's funny because, you know, think about all the times when you weren't kind. You know, everybody's been like that, right? All of us. We all try. I think especially everybody on the show I know is always kind. But there's times when we're not, right? And that's the times you regret, right? I don't think you ever regret being kind to somebody. But you regret, you know, not doing that or doing something that wasn't kind. So beautiful Lockdown. I really, really appreciate your writing. Excellent, excellent job. And Laurent, go for it.
Thank you. You know, unfortunately, we live in an age when voices from on high stir discontent, polarizing everything, and the media follows right along with it. Why join in the media game if it is breeding negativity? Why only seek out who to blame if it polarizes hostility? Don't malign, instead be kind. All they do is malign. I'm not going to name them. I don't want to get into politics. I think we all know who I'm talking about. It is that kind of lack of respect with everything politicized that keeps us apart. So if we can just turn away from that and remember who we are, so many of us have forgotten how to be the people we are. We let other things from the outside, especially the media, as is reflected in the poetry. Look in the mirror and reflect, yes, it is all of us. We have to change. We all have to do as much as we can do, and if we do, one by one, over a period of time, a movement builds, and I'm waiting for that movement to arrive. Great piece.
Excellent, Laurent. Excellent, yes. I am too. Well, you know, things go in cycles, so hopefully, you know, all this evil that we're seeing in the world is going to pass someday, and we'll survive it, and hopefully, you know, something new will come out of it. I like I said, kind of said earlier, I'm really seeing a change in, you know, I'm happy to say my son's generation, and it's not just him I see, but just these kids who are, you know, in their 20s. I have a few of them that are actually working for me, and just I'm seeing amazing work ethics and really a great ideals and culture. So I'm starting to see a shift in some of the young people. I really am. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. Hopefully I live to see these kids actually do something. But, I'm hopeful. I really am. And I'm always hopeful. I'm trying to have some horrible segues here when Faziana's on. So, Faziana, what do you think?
You're so cheesy, but thank you.
I know I am.
It's okay. I agree with everything both of you have said. Yes, it's hard to say anything that you haven't said because you were both so thorough. Wow, what can I add? I like how it goes specific and then broad, like filling every neuron space, every little bit could be filled with that mantra. But also it talks about, like, as a whole, the world and society and, like, the bigger things of the polarized hostility, like Laurent was talking about. And what Dan said about how the last sentence of each stanza standing out and being in a different style. I think my favorite one of those last ones that were highlighted was mirror power aligned, reflect being kind. You gotta look at yourself and see who do you want to be, and have you been the kindness that you hope to see in the world? This whole thing had a wonderful message, and it fit the idea of the contest very well. It had that positive energy and hopefulness.
Excellent, Faziana. And it's gouda to be cheddar, to be cheesy. Sorry. I had to say it. Sue me later. I had to put it out there. So,
Brie.
Brie. Excellent. Yeah, I could do cheese puns all day long. That would make me happy. Definitely. All right. I think it might be Laurent's turn to read, right?
That is correct.
Laurent, are you ready to rock?
Oh, okay. Normally somebody's going to tell me to read, but all right, got it.
Oh, sorry.
This is Make Kindness. I read Summertime. Make kindness be your everlasting guide, lighthouse in a world of somber darkness. Let your love flourish and let hate subside. In moments of frustration or high pride, make use of the humble waves of goodness. Make kindness be your everlasting guide. Don't let blind rage or hatred override. Kindness a gift that conquers loneliness. Let your love flourish and let hate subside. Celebrate our diversity with pride that brings warmth, peace into our emptiness. Make kindness be your everlasting guide. Consider others and do not divide. When friends, strangers shall fall, lift their sadness. Let your love flourish and let hate subside. With kindness in your heart, you will abide. Your soul will feel lighter than their madness. Make kindness be your everlasting guide. Let your love flourish and let hate subside. End quote.
Excellent job, Laurent. And both Lockdown Locks and this one both got honorable mentions, I will say. It's so great to see, you know, a lot of people get on kindness as their role model here. And it was, again, a great reading, Laurent, on that. Where is it here? Celebrate our diversity with pride. It brings warmth, peace to our emptiness. Make kindness your everlasting guide. you know, diversity, I think, is the beauty of humanity. It really is. And again, things I've seen, you know, really, I even though there's still a lot of work to be done with that, I'm still seeing a difference. You know, when the whole Black Lives Matter movement came, obviously there's so much racial talk, right, and problems. And there's a gentleman, there's a guy named Benny who's an older Black man that works at the company I work at. And I asked him, him and I were talking about it. I said, Benny, I said, you actually lived during the 60s as a Black man, and he was in the South, because he was telling me he grew up in the South. I'm like, how does this compare to that? He's like, yeah, there's no comparison. He's like, it was 1,000 times worse back then, you know. Not that there weren't problems now, but meaning when he said that means, okay, here's a guy that's showing, you know, even though there's still problems, it has changed, it has gotten better. And I'm just waiting for that time when diversity is, you know, we celebrate diversity instead of, you know, being separated by it and being scared by it, right? There was I'm going to paraphrase it, but in the TV show Seinfeld, if anybody's watched that, there's a great line where Elaine's boyfriend, they're trying to figure out if he's Black or not, and Jerry and George are talking. Jerry's like, I think he's Black. He's like, what? You can't say that. What? That he's Black? Yeah, he is, but you can't say it. And it's just like you can't even say that somebody is a certain race, because it's racist, you know. Hopefully we're getting past that. But, you know, the great message of kindness and hope. And I've said that I think the biggest problem on the planet is selfishness, and the thing that we need mostly is compassion. Now, if everybody is selfless, right, what's the point, right? You all have to have fun. We all have to do things. But there's so much, you know, selfishness in the world and so little compassion, it seems. So, you know, another great message of hope and kindness that we've seen tonight. So, excellent. Faziana, your turn.
I was really impressed with being able to keep up the rhyme scheme the whole time. Like, it's not just ABA per stanza. He kept the same A's and B's in all of them. The mastering the villanelle here. And without running out of words, that actually made sense. You know, it didn't feel forced in its rhyme, which when you have to use the same rhyme so many times, sometimes it can, where you're just like, oh, I'll make a sentence that ends in that somehow. But no, it flowed, and it kept to its message, and it managed to be both heartfelt and structured. And I think that's a difficult challenge to succeed in. So I'm impressed with that.
Excellent. And you got to read it, Laurent. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I like what he wrote, because it works really well. Villanelles can fall flat on their face if your lines don't support what it is you're talking about. And here he does it beautifully. And I'll echo Faziana. The rhyming is excellent. I mean, the technical achievements in this, iambic pentameter, a clever rhyme scheme carried all the way through. I like the technical ability, in addition to what the poem actually speaks to, like the poem previous to this one, they both espoused a warmth that we need to extend to everyone around ourselves. And we already discussed how important that was. It's a great piece for that reason and others.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty. Let's keep going with life.
All right. Daniel, will you please read the one by Owen Nichols?
Only because you called me Daniel, I'll absolutely do that. You're being very proper. This is called Tales of Influence. Through the looking glass and down a hole, the rabbit did hop. Over the seas, the captain did chase the whale. through 1,000 adventures, a storyteller.
Oh, sorry. Never mind. I thought I had an audio for him, but that's another show. I apologize. Go ahead.
That's okay. All right. We will just start over with Owen. I will be the auditor for you, no problem. Tales of Influence. Through the looking glass and down a hole, the rabbit did hop. Over the seas, the captain did chase the whale. Through 1,000 adventures, storytellers' tales did wend. Through the cracks of doom, the ring did drop. The death of a mockingbird, bird out of ignorance, the judgment made. Two paths entered the wood, their difference I never understood. A journey of a boy to man with destiny to fulfill, guided by his family and friends made along the way. From back streets, boy to lord, a better man he did his grandfather make. These are some of the stories and tales I have read through time that has in part made me what I am today. End poem. And he said in his office notes, I do not have a person as a role model, rather influence from the wisdom in the books I have read. Excellent. Want to start with you, Aphasia?
Sure. I think that he picked some good books here. You know, I see Alice in Wonderland and Moby Dick and To Kill a Mockingbird. He has some classics here. That
Lord of the Rings.
Of course. Love Lord of the Rings. He sees value in a lot of them, and to be shaped by all of those things that you read makes sense. You know, you form your ideals and your values from observing things and taking in what you see as heroes, and to read these books and see role models within them. You don't have to have a specific role model in real life. You can pick up little bits and pieces from the people who you admire in stories. So I thought this was an interesting fit for the contest. It was a pre-write, but it worked well. Laurent, what did you think?
I think that stories are among the most important things that the human family has ever created. We live in our stories. And down through the ages, there are stories that are immortal. And when you're a young person and you're a reader and you discover some of the books, some of the stories, some of the things that are mentioned in this poem, you eat them up. You devour them. You go to bed thinking of them. You wake up grabbing the book that extra half hour before school starts. In your back pocket during lunchtime, and you're reading it. You're reading it on the way home. I mean, we all share these stories. There's a common fabric that all of us share in these things. So, yes, I agree. A lot of what I see on this page in this poem affected me as well, and I'm sure you and other people who have read these same things. Right, that way he managed to grasp that and put it down in this poem. Nicely done.
I love what you said, Lauren. I related to everything, and I do agree. I think besides, you know, maybe drumming, you know, and art, right, drawing, storytelling is probably one of the oldest art forms by far, right? People standing around kind of talking about their day.
And that includes oral traditions, I might add.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you can just picture, you know, ancient man sitting around fires, kind of telling about what they saw throughout the day. That there you go, that storytelling right there. At its finest, it's been through the age. We're doing it right now, right? From then till right now to us, we're still doing it. And you know, what you described was absolutely me. I still have, Laurent, some of the books that I walked around in high school in my back pocket, exactly how you described. I still have some for me. I'm not even kidding. I still have the books. And for me, it was science fiction author Larry Niven. He was the guy
one of my favorite authors. Oh, yeah, I've got all his books.
Yeah, he's great. I still have some of the books that I have that are, like, torn to shreds. The covers are half ripped off because I would carry them around my pocket. And
can't get rid of them.
can't, there's no, I'm, no, I'm looking at it, I'm like, I can't, I've had this for 40 years, you know, I can't get rid of this.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, I love Larry Niven. He's my favorite. He got me into science fiction, Lord of the Rings. You know, same thing. I argue is one of the greatest novels. Moby Dick is what
you must, yes. Yeah, you must have read some of the stuff he did with Jerry Pournelle.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. I, yep, with Jerry Pournelle, absolutely. Yep. In fact, I was just rereading Inferno, which is extremely dark, but I like it. And he wrote I could have sworn that I read the second book of that. He wrote this book, for those who know, called Inferno, which is basically a take on Dante's Inferno, except a science fiction writer dies and ends up in hell and has to literally walk through hell. And it's very dark. There's a ton of, you know, violence, and he describes in graphic detail what he sees. And it's interesting because he had written that he realized in the middle of the book, he's like, I don't want to be here. I'm in hell. Why did I start writing this book? So he finished it, you know, and he finished it well, but he didn't like being there because he put himself in hell.
Mm-hmm.
But the book was so popular, it sold something like 15 million copies in like, you know, 30 different languages. He had to write a second one. And the second one's interesting because there's very little violence in it. He actually meets, if you've never read it, the main person he meets and walks along with is poet Sylvia Plath. So it's kind of interesting that this, in the second book, he goes through hell with her. There's very little violence because I think he just, you know, didn't want to be in that world. It's more just about kind of exploring hell. But anyway,
One day we must discuss Robert Silverberg.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know what I'm reading now? I'm sorry, Faziana. Laurent and I are geeking out on science fiction for a second. I don't know why. The first Dune book I thought was amazing, and I don't know why I never read the rest of them, so I'm reading the second one now and almost done. But, yeah, the those kind of things, the books really do have a huge influence on you. I mean, because of Larry Niven, because of Tolkien, I've had a lifelong fascination and love of science fiction and fantasy. And there you go. So there you go, Owen. You inspired a great conversation between Laurent and I. And, yeah, absolutely. And I know that, you know, Faziana, I forget if you call me, no, because Laurent and I have been talking for 45 minutes. But certainly, if anybody has a love of books and stories, it is our dear friend, Faziana, being a librarian.
I did already comment, but I definitely do have a love of books and stories. I have been mostly reading kids' books the last few years because I am the children's librarian. But, I mean, even those can be powerful to me.
Yeah.
I just finished the audiobook version of The Great Bear by David A. Robertson, and in it they actually talk a lot about the importance of storytelling because they're in a culture, it's sort of like Narnia, where they're going into another world, but the other world is based on the traditional stories of the Cree Indigenous peoples, Canada, and in it, they talk about how they don't just write things down, and they don't just draw it, although they do draw out their histories. They always memorize it because if anything happens, you know, someone can take a book from you. Someone can paint over your murals, but nobody can take your memories if you pass them on. So they were, like, trying to get as many people as possible to memorize the stories before this attack that was coming. Because it just showed the importance of all of their stories, that they really valued keeping their stories alive. So it was a story within a story, and in conclusion, yes, I love stories.
Now, I have a question for you, Faziana. Do you ever read science fiction? If so, do you have any kind of favorite science fiction? I know you like fantasy, but have you ever read science fiction?
Yes, it's been a while since I've delved deep into it. I really liked Arthur C. Clarke, and
one of the best.
Timothy Zahn kind of like went science fiction slash a little bit of fantasy. I liked Robert Sawyer until I met him.
There's definitely a story there, that's for sure.
I liked his books, but he was extremely sexist towards me, and just sleazebag to me. Defamation suit. it kind of destroyed his books for me. Yeah, so I don't know. There's so many. It's hard for me to pick it. I've read like so many books. It is very difficult for me to sometimes keep them straight because they all meld together a little bit too much. I go through science fiction phases, I would say.
I hope you've introduced your kids to the Redwall series.
Redwall,
of course. Yes. Redwall is still huge, and it's a good kind of gateway into more serious fare after they've read the Warriors series. All the kids are obsessed with Warriors, which is like from the perspective of these cats. And if they like animal perspective stories, I as they get a little bit older, I lean them towards Redwall.
I've only read the first one. Are the other ones then worth it, the next ones? I do actually have the next two, I believe. I just haven't read them yet.
It's been years since I read them, but at the time I thought so.
Okay. I might have to reread them. But, yeah, that's a great one, Milan. Excellent bringing up. I'm sure that we could talk about books for the next 4 hours in this type of a show, but...
You should do a show on books.
A show on books. But I'm sure we have some more poetry to read.
We do, in fact, we do. I think it's my turn to read.
Go for it.
I will read one by Jenny the Deep. Childhood role models in music and television. Growing up, I lacked a proper father figure, so I sought out male role models on TV, from Mr. Rogers to Bob Ross's painted pictures. Both aided my imagination and aspirations since 1993. LeVar Burton inspired me with reading Rainbow and piqued my interest in books again. Never did I have a true childhood hero, so it was grateful to see them on television. When I was deep in my feelings, I rocked out, listening to musicians like Eminem and Weird Al. They always turned my frown upside down. In secret, I even considered them a good pal. I've always treasured Clapton, like the rest of them, but now also the multiple talents of Johnny Depp. End poem.
Excellent job. And I'm glad she brings this up. I put in my thing, I had a really great father. I really did. He was a great guy and an amazing father. But, you know, so my biggest role models are pop culture heroes I never met, which is true. I did end up meeting. Nowadays, I did end up actually meeting a lot of them. But I always quote Neil Peart on this show as one of my biggest influences by far. He's the reason I started playing drums. He's the reason that I started writing poetry. He really is. There was a time, and I wrote a poem about this. There was a time that I wanted to be Neil Peart. I wanted to be in Rush. Like, I just wanted to do what he did. And then I don't know if you know the story about him. Then what happened was his daughter died in a car accident. And 9 months later or 10 months later, something like that, his wife died of cancer. And he says in his book that, you know, but we know she died of a broken heart. I didn't want to be Neil Peart anymore, you know, and I don't think he did either, and I don't think he ever recovered from that. And what I got from that was that he was still being an influence. You know, he was still being a, you know, instead of, he influenced me to do those things, but then even with his tragedy, he influenced me to, okay, you know what, I you know, the family is what's important, right? And you know, I wouldn't want any of that I wouldn't want that part of his life. So it made me feel like I'm glad where I am. You know, I'm not a famous musician, not any of these things, but I would have, you know, give that up in a heartbeat to you know, keep my family and have what I have, right? So that kind of thing keeps going. It's amazing how all that stuff can get into you, and influence you. You know, pop culture, whatever it is, books or you know, movies or whatever can really kind of touch your, you know, touch your soul and affect you so, you know, so well. I mean, how many times when you mention music or movies to people, they go, oh, I love that one, right? Because it just means so much to them, right? Everybody has those movies that when they come on TV, no matter how many times you've seen them, you got to keep it on and watch it, right? You know, how many songs that you know, Laurent and I are older, right? Laurent, how many songs that you've been listening to for 40 years that you still listen to? You know,
64 years I can remember on Bob Dylan.
Oh, there you go, right.
But well, no, not that old. 60 years I've been listening to Bob Dylan, put it that way.
Right. And still do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's just such a part of you, you know. So, yeah it's interesting how that kind of stuff can be part of you, you know. Absolutely. What do you think, Laura?
Well, it's a great poem. Let me mention very briefly before I speak on the poem, a book I would hardly recommend in the fantasy world is Duncton Wood by William Horwood.
Okay.
If you haven't read that, you absolutely need to. It's huge. Okay. Childhood role models in music and television. How many times have we heard the expression, a TV family? We get attached to people we see on TV. If we're loners, we see them maybe every night, maybe once a week, maybe more frequently, and they do become part of you. So it's interesting that he grabbed people, very natural that he grabbed people from, you know, Mr. Rogers, Bob Ross, LeVar Burton, Eminem, Weird Al, all the things that all that you see frequently, that you enjoy, that you visit every day. But in the end, the multiple talents of Johnny Depp sounds like got to an age where he became of great interest to Jenny, and I like that too. We always fantasize about the people we see and we'll never meet, but it's fun, and I appreciate this poem for that.
Absolutely. What was that book again, Laurent? I'm looking it up right now.
Duncton Wood, D-U-N-C-T-O-N, William Horwood. I put that particular book up there. I mean, not quite on the level of Lord of the Rings, but damn close.
Okay. Book one of the Duncton Chronicles. I'm going to order it right now.
Bravo.
I'll take it for
you.
I'll let you know
how
it is.
Likes it. Yeah, it's one of
Absolutely.
Those books I carried around reading it all the time, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm always looking for what my wife and I go to. There's a used bookstore, a big one. Unfortunately, they're starting to die out, but there's one that we go to. My wife and I go to all the time and just kind of always looking for kind of, you know, crazy older things that maybe have been disappeared or stuff I've never heard before.
I'm about to start selling off my 3,000 fantasy and science fiction books. It's starting to fetch money on eBay.
Yeah, there you go. Don't regret it. Don't be like, why?
Hey, what am I going to do with all these books? I'm 75 years old, for crying out loud. I don't want them thrown out or anything.
Exactly. You know, Faziano, I don't want to make you sad, but there's a great, if anybody ever goes to Boston, there's a Brattle bookstore on West Street, which is a great old, they have some amazing old books, and outside they put all these books. I literally got a book there for $5 from the year 1798. They have just, and I literally bought it just because it was from 1798. I'm like, I can't believe I'm holding a book from the 1700s. They have all these, you know, great old books you can buy. It's an amazing place. So if you ever get to Boston, check out the Brattle Bookstore. The sad part is that, and for all these bookstores, when they don't sell them, like when they're outside like that, they recycle them. Because they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
You know, they get so many donations coming in that even these bookstores, you know, unless it's a really good book, they'll keep. They just, you know, they get destroyed, which is always sad to, you know, see just books destroyed and some of them going out of print. I'm just saying, you know, and then some of them go out of print. So these used bookstores are great that you can find some stuff that's out of print. I'm sorry, Faziana, if I made you sad talking about recycling books, but.
Oh, I've had to do it as well. We get a lot of donations that are not in good enough shape to use. I know.
I'll have to go to the used book superstore, by the way, on Amazon. The paperback of Duncan Wood is $50. So it must be, that might be one of those ones that's hard to get.
Well, that's probably a first edition or something. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not in print anymore?
Happens, maybe that's
it's
why.
It's not in print?
Maybe it is. I don't know. It's $50 on Amazon, which is weird. $40 hardcover, $3.99 Kindle. That happens. I've seen some, you know, stuff is starting to go out of print. This may be very sad the other day. So I was watching TV, and there's a movie out, which maybe you guys have seen. It's called Winnie the Pooh, Honey and Blood. And I'm like, what? How is that? And my son's like, yeah, Winnie the Pooh just went public domain.
Uh-huh.
You know that? Do you know about this, Aphasia? I'm like,
yeah,
so they're going to ruin Winnie the Pooh for me? Come on, they can't do that. So, you know, Winnie the Pooh will never go, you know, that'll always be there. But, you know, there are probably a lot of books that are starting to go out of print. And
Dan, if you can't find Duncan Wood anywhere, PM me your address at some point. I'll send you my copy.
Oh, I wouldn't want to take your copy from you all, but I will find it. I'll look for it. Yeah, this looks like a first edition, but we'll go into the used bookstore this weekend and I will find it. Yeah, it's like it was publicized publication 1981. It shouldn't be out of print yet. But
it
anyway,
could be.
Something's sorry,
only
sorry,
last like 5 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I will.
You got to read Gorman, yes, too.
All right, you're piling up my reading here.
Gorman, yes, you never read? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh.
I'm sure there's much in it. Much I've never read.
You
got to
send him a list.
I know. I'm going to shut up now.
This is the way a friend of mine once said, though, because you know how you say, oh, well, you haven't read this? You haven't read this? And a friend of mine said once when I didn't see a movie, he goes, oh, man, I wish I was watching that movie for the first time again. You know, I'm envious that you get to watch that for the first time. So that's the way I've always thought now instead of, like, you know, I feel bad I never read anything. It's like I'm excited that, ooh, there's a new thing.
Well, it's like a Faziana when she first saw High Rent.
Oh, God, I love that video. I love the song. Yeah.
I watch him every day now for a year, for at least 2 hours. He's amazing.
He's so good. I'm obsessed with him now, too. I listen to him constantly.
He just dropped two really good ones.
Ooh. Okay, I gotta make sure they're on my playlist. Okay, back to the poem, as much as I like this. Jenny the Deep, I think, did a good job of combining a lot of the role models that we had in our prompt and also adding her own. And I like that she pointed out that she didn't have a father figure. Now, I'm not saying I'm glad she didn't have one, but I am. I like that it acknowledges that sometimes, you know, we don't have someone who gives us a certain aspect of a role model. You know, she needed a positive male role model, and she saw that. And my other contest, the one that was like the sister contest to this, that was the female role models, you know, maybe someone didn't have a mother or a strong woman in their life to look up to, and they can have that there. So, I mean, of course, you can have both parents and still take role models from other places as well. But when you lack a certain role model, it's good to have positive representations that you can look up to. And I think that all of these people here have inspired her in good ways. So thank you for sharing, Jenny.
Absolutely. And, LeBron, the on Amazon, the hardcover Duncan Wood for $40 is actually a signed copy.
That'll do it.
So that'll do it. So I might actually buy that. $40 I can. That actually might that be worth the $40. But anyway,
Jesus,
go for it. Yeah, go for it. I like signed things.
Me too. I have a collection.
Yep. All right.
Okay. Laura, it's your turn to read the one by Springsky 39.
Well, let's do it, shall we? David Attenborough, one of my favorite guys ever. I obsessed over the planet Earth stuff. Sir David Attenborough. He is a voice for nature, the creatures great and small, with his broad nomenclature of the animals, them all. Concerned about the earth, its seas, and its lands, his voice soothing, unrehearsed, is that of the modern man. And his raspy, soothing voice oozes with a gent's appeal, the fauna and the flora his choice, with their protection his big deal. And I am comforted to see him, the narrator of animal shows, an English gentleman's surely, an icon teaching good things to know. End poem.
Excellent read, Dan.
Nice reading.
This is, a great shout out to David Attenborough, the way that he has brought awareness to the animals and the planet, and just generally the importance of nature. There is something about his voice. I like that, his raspy, soothing voice. Sounds like someone else we know, one of our readers here tonight.
I wish.
You have a fantastic voice for narration. Honestly, you should do
that. Oh, 100%, Laurent. 100%. She certainly wasn't talking about me, that's for sure. So she's talking about you. Absolutely.
I was talking about Laurent, but Dan, you're awesome too. The icon of teaching good things to know. And, you know, there's a certain weight that goes to things that are that have certain, someone who voices it. So it's become sort of a trusted thing where if there's a documentary that's narrated by him, I'll watch it because I think that's going to be a good one. And he wouldn't narrate something that wasn't fantastic because, you know, he's so well established, and he can pick and choose, and it seems like everything he's done has been really great, at least from what I've seen. So he is that icon. I like that this talks about what mattered to him. It talks about the way that his voice resonates, and that feeling of wanting to learn inspired by him. So this kind of covered everything. Now, our version of Mr. Attenborough, what did you think?
You got to stop that. well, I have to agree with you, obviously. David Attenborough's voice is kind of unique. It's one that is impossible to mistrust. You hear him speak, and it rings of truth, it rings of knowledge. It rings of history. It rings of someone who understands everything there is to know about what he shows you. I mean, it's one thing to have a wonderfully filmed documentary, wonderful scenes of animals, nature, and the like, and then it's married to a voice that doesn't quite seal the deal. But he just so perfectly complements that series. And you know, this poem absolutely reflects that truth, his voice soothing, unrehearsed, is that of the modern man, the one who understands. I really like this poem.
I really like this poem.
I did too. And he is a you know, he's a naturalist, right? He's an actual, he's not just a narrator, he's an actual naturalist. And he's got passion in his voice, you can feel it. He's not just, you know, I've seen some other ones, I don't want to name who, but other people have done some other ones, and you feel like they're just narrating, you know? Whereas this is here, you can feel that passion, like he really does care about these things. And he goes there, you know, he's not just, you've seen some where people, he's just narration, but he's there. You know, if you watch the Planet Earth series, he's at some of these actual places. And, you know, some of the best film you'll ever see, right? The great, you know, I actually went to school for film production, which I ended up being just a manager at a call center, whatever. But when I remember this, when I was in an internship at this company in the film, I made corporate films. I actually made some films for the city of Boston, some commercials and stuff. And the professionals that I was with, what they would always do is watch nature shows, because the best cinematographers, the best photographers, the best cameramen all wanted to do nature shows, all of them. That's where you get the best stuff. It was the most challenging, and it was you know, that was the best in the craft one. And it's great to see somebody like David, you know, again, we've talked about kindness and compassion, somebody who's actually is a naturalist trying to take care of the world in a world that's humanity that's trying to eat the world, you know, that's trying to consume it. To have somebody that's actually trying to save it and promoting that is amazing, you know, certainly a hero. You know, one of my regrets speaking of a naturalist is I just don't know why I didn't do it. There's a little theater right by my house, and Jane Goodall, who is one of those people I can't believe is still alive, that I could have met. Like, she was speaking there, and I don't know why I didn't go see her. I might have even been able to meet her. To me, that would be, like, amazing to meet her. David Attenborough, I think, is up there with her. Like, one of those guys I would just love to meet. So. Thank you, David, if you're listening, which I'm sure you're not, but I appreciate everything you do.
I almost saw Jane Goodall, and I had tickets, but I didn't get to go because COVID happened, and she didn't come.
Oh.
I was so close.
I don't know why I didn't go. But, hey, she's still – this was just, like, a few months ago, so she's still around. Maybe she'll come back to Indiana.
Maybe. I hope so.
And Laurence, I actually found the copy for $4.57, so I'm ordering it right now.
Bravo. Well invested.
Yeah.
All right, Laurent, I'm going to get you to read the one by Peter Salway, please.
Are you referring to me? Moi?
Oui. S'il vous plaît.
Oui. Okay. All right. Give me a moment here to... The Happy Artist after Bob Ross. Talk to obedient self. Wireless camera. Fun with cloud cover. Alpine vistas forever. Palette knife and see you later. Remember, art your own. Be free with cloud cover. Novice dauber to easily assemble. Yep, Bob the do-it-yourself painter, demonstrating on canvas and camera. Let a moon peek through if you like. Some strange assistant setting his up. Prime panel, props on kitchen shelf. Get me Bob Ross money back, $300. Squeeze them bladders out. Start with the sky. What a mess. Sunrise, sunset. Duck minced by the propellers of a jet. Bob. A mentor once in the services, Alaskan Air Force, my guest, marching under cloud cover. Storms and abattoirs, screaming abortions, dogs mating in the upper floor heavens, my cloud cover all over the shop, curtains of mother, gout of Rubens, stricken with artistic doubt, not what the master wished. Be happy with Valium vision, let cloud cover be like a quilt. Serious nude to shower at sunset, mountains of breasts, protruding nipples of granite, talk of Jesus, him an Anglican, I guess. with his apprentice to painter's Christ, halo of glowing perm, making the master blush, suggesting gentle cadence. Old would-be Vincent, tone it down. Down under, man, give some room, not overdone, for buyers to dream. But turkey in a Mexican oven, art now all upside down. Old patrons in galleries collapsing, grainy videos of dogs fornicating. Now investors to dream of Bob Ross' personal implements. Pallets, pink condom, stable undergarments. No children, I suspect. My master, now at leisure in the afterlife. Commissions of clouds, happy and rough. Last line and epitaph, fun of do-it-yourself art. Whether buried with pallets, cremated with mall stick, wrapped Egyptian cap. Back to last line epitaph. No room for a stonemason's doubt, but lucky apprentice, walking scenic 70, alpine vistas of Alaska forever. But footprints of Nietzsche, lust of Mark Antony, sail of the stones, snow scenes in times of climate change. Ask a molten Cezanne, lollipop mountain, over hearth of old man's death bank, outcoat. Tate preferring stolen undergarments, Rimbaud's foreign pain, whilst Bob above, his fans, his happy wings. Finally, free of cloud cover, gravity, synchronized swimming of the stars. Splashes of Pollock, Jackson, in fact. A white artist, free at last. Black man wants to make a pose. The bent horizon to turn in reverse. An anal Luther denounced such captive illusions. But to hear melodic Bob paint cloud cover of a happy creator, lone disciple of pleasing, no more the folks appeasing, free, free at last. End quote.
Excellent read, and I always am kind of baffled by Peter Solway's works, because he is just very creative in his references to things. At first, I was like, wow, this is so tame for him. Look at it talking about Bob Ross. And then I was like, oh, that escalated quickly as he went into his style, what he's known for, which is like the kind of risque sexual and violence and you know, grainy videos of dogs fornicating, that kind of thing. I know Peter is an artist and writes a lot about art, so I don't know if he shares the happy everyone can paint kind of mentality that that Bob Ross did. This feels like a little bit of a poke at Bob Ross, actually. And it goes in some interesting places. Old would-be Vincent, tone it down, down under man. So it's like, you know, not the skill of Van Gogh. You know, you gotta, it's sort of saying like he's dumbing it down to make it so anyone can try to do it. There's some really interesting stuff here, but I'm not really sure what to say. He's very creative. Very, very creative. Peter Solway has his own unique style. Just reading it, I know it's his, and it's always a wild journey. What did you think, Daniel?
Yes, he's really interesting. I was trying to find it here. So I had one where he was writing kind of like he was writing about like, you know, I read this contest and he was writing about like. Kind of evilness and eating picnics, but also like wizardry and things like that. About this beach thing that I had, And I was a little, you know, he was getting me. I was stumped too, so I wrote him. I said, "Is there a specific prompt that you used?" And he wrote, "Sand and more sand on beach shots. Sandwiches, Dan." He was like yelling, like, "Sandwiches, get it? Sandwiches and sandwiches." So I'm like, "Oh, there you go." And that to me, that comment from him to me, literally explained Peter Salway. To the point where when you said Peter Salway, for some reason in my mind went, "Ah, Peter Salway." I don't know why, but that came to me. And that's what he does. I think he kind of takes metaphors and description over description over description and hides them in there. So he has these very, very unique and interesting, almost puzzle-like descriptions that he has, which I think is really great. I think he might be poking fun of him, but I also think he's showing the expressiveness and the, you know, being able to be free and just kind of doing whatever you want to do. Here's the influence of your old mind, and this, no one's probably going to understand what I'm saying here, but kiddingly, many, many years ago, I called Bob Artis the most evil pop culture figure of all time, and for no reason, because he's like the nicest guy, right? And that's kind of why I was doing it. I was like, I was just kidding around. Bob Ross, evil, take him away. He's trying to take over the world with his you know, influential thoughts. This hidden me. I just was kidding around, and I kidded around so much. I literally every time I see him, I think like evil. So I like influenced myself. So sorry, Bob. I'm sure you're probably a nice guy. I just wanted to throw that out there to show you guys how crazy I am. I think he's you know, to me, what Peter is doing is just getting into expressiveness and how, you know, you can turn different things into art. I'll tell my quick art story. I believe I told before. So my theory is that there's no such thing as bad art unless nobody gets it or gets anything out of it, including the artist. The difference is that, you know, you just don't get it. For example, I was with art in the 90s. I was at a Alphonse Mucha exhibit in London. If anybody knows him, 18th century graphic artist. And there's this huge painting of scenery and so forth. And I was looking at it. It was pretty. It was nice to me, you know, like a huge, like, you know, 8-foot painting, 10-foot painting. And there were these two women in front of me literally crying, looking at the painting, talking about how he's expressing this and the turmoil that the servant group of people went through, and they were literally in tears. And I remember looking up at it, like trying to figure out what am I missing? I couldn't get it. And what I realized at that moment was, you know, it wasn't that, it was me. Like, I just didn't get it, you know? I remember, you know, shortly after watching a video on Janet Jackson where this young girl was crying, you know, because Janet Jackson meant so much to her. Again, I respect Janet Jackson, not my kind of music. I didn't get it. That's on me. And that's what I think of art. And, you know, again, that's Bob Ross. I'm sure his paintings mean, you know, so much more than everyone else, where we might be learning and trying to paint like him. But to him, it's, you know, it's meaningful. So anyway, that's my rant, and I'm sticking to it. I'm really tired, so I don't know who's next and what we're doing and who has to comment and where I am in the world and who I am. Somebody help me, please.
You lost me a little bit, but I mean, I am also not sure where we are. I lost me too.
In my turn to comment, but I'm going to pass and just give a textual appreciation of this, because I do want to try and get mine in before the end of the show.
Oh, yes. Okay, let me refresh myself so I can see yours.
And actually, when I was talking to Faison, I lost myself too, which is why I stopped talking, because I didn't know what the hell, where the hell I was going.
No, you were good. I just
I'm so tired.
I forgot what I was going to say. Okay, so I have your poem up now, Laurent.
Well, it doesn't have to be immediate. It can be anytime you want. All right. Let's go here. All right. I got to refresh. All right. All right. role model after many, many years, I've decided was my father. Exodus is called Father Was a Dragon. Father was a dragon, always breathing fire, joints, cigarettes, pipes, all sorts. Tobacco and the immortal herb kept his temper at bay. A nice enough guy with anger issues, quelled through adjustments to mood, artificial ones that kept him reasonably sane. He hid it well, as if being ashamed was no reason to quit, but enough to puff in private. Father was a dragon, soaring high on intellectual wings, blessed with a photographic memory, graduated magna cum laude, Columbia. Lovely to be his child. How can you ever be good enough? My best kept him quiet. My worst brought out magnificent wrath, a rolling thunder of damnation, cursing me from Olympus in a fatherly way. He accused me of being Icarus, flaming out deliberately. Father was a dragon, and like all dragons who have vanished from the face of the earth, he vanished as well on a warm day in 2005. If I had a factual or philosophical question, he always knew the answer. I've still got questions. He took a lot of answers with him, like who I am really. I think he knew, and I still don't. End point.
That was a beautiful read and a wonderful poem, a great tribute to your father. I really like the ending. I mean, it's sad, but it is powerful that he took a lot of answers with him, and to even feel like he took your identity, that you wanted to figure out who you were through him, and he's gone. And the way that you put that, too, with, like, all dragons, he vanished. The use of a dragon metaphor worked really nice, and I like that it combined the anger of that can come with dragons. The fire can be the feelings, but also tying it in with the smoking. That it worked in layers there. I thought that was really good. The rolling thunder of damnation, I like that line. And I always like references to Icarus. The excuse me of being flaming out deliberately. I mean, as soon as you put that myth in there, it's gold for me. that was fantastic. Dan, what did you think?
I liked it. Laura, you and I are connecting on a lot of levels tonight, I think. And it reminded me of my father as well. I thought you hit a lot of really interesting points, and I think it's a lot with a lot of fathers, like Afasiana said. You know, there's good and bad, and both things will influence you, right? And I really like the one that graduated magna cum laude, Columbia, lived to be his child. How can you ever be good enough, right? You know, our fathers might have. When was your father born?
Yeah, 1921, maybe.
21, yeah. So I have an aunt who I think was born, who's still alive, actually, believe it or not. It was 1920 or 21. My father was born in 27, so about the same thing, right? They lived through the Great Depression. My father was actually a Marine in World War II. You know, both of our fathers at the time that literally built this country, right? After World War II, that's who built the kind of considered the greatest generation. How do you live up to that? You know, how can you be good enough to be like that? And I catch myself all the time turning into my father in just physical ways. I talk all the time for my job, and I'm hearing my voice turn into an old man voice now, like my father's did, like tired and weathered. Even the other day I was sneezing and was like, geez, that's my, it's true. Even the other day I sneezed. I was like, it's my father's sneeze. As I'm getting older, I'm seeing my face even kind of go like him, and it's just, you know, you know. So it's interesting. You know, I'm sorry about your father passing away as well too. I like the
fathers do that.
They do. You know, I always say it's you know, it's a horrible time in someone's life, but it's better than the alternative. You know, a parent seeing the child. You know. That's not supposed to happen, right? The other way around. But yeah, a lot of, you know, the ending I really connected to as well. You know, you got a lot of questions. You know, luckily when I had my son, I got to hear a lot of stories that I either forgot or I didn't hear because my father would tell the stories, you know, for my son. But, you know, I talk to my wife a lot, like I'll think of things, either stuff about the family or whatever. And I'll be like, I don't remember, you know, if I asked my father that, I don't remember the answer. You know, I wish I wrote it down. You know, it gets go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned your dad was in the military, World War II, as was my father. Quick little story. He was drafted for the CIA after the war. CIA was going after a number of intellectual types for reasons I don't know. Anyway, so he and a bunch of his friends who were also drafted by the CIA after World War II got on a plane, and one didn't because they were headed for Washington. My dad asked his buddy, well, where are you going? He says, you know what? I'm going to go out to Hollywood to try and make it in the movie business. It was Carl Reiner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. It was a powerful generation.
Oh yeah, 100%. What was your father in the war? What was he? What did he do?
He was in charge of the GI education for all of China, India, and Burma.
Oh wow! And
he's got some stories.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I got a few from my father from there too. But he was, you know, it was interesting because he didn't want to talk about it. My father-in-law was in Korea. He didn't want to talk about it either, you know. It's just one of the, you know, like, it was, you know, he remembered things. But the only time I ever saw my father cry ever was way, way later in life, you know, a few years before he died. He spoke at my kids, it was like third grade or something, in Veterans Day, and he went in and he spoke, him and my mother. And basically, they stood in front of the – I stood with them, and they stood in front of the class, and everybody asked him a question. And yeah, they asked a few of my mother, too, who was, you know, during the Depression as well. And they asked my father one question of, do you still miss the people that you went to war with? And you're talking, you know, 70 years later, he teared up. You know, because he lost most of his friends that he went and lost, and he still, you know, he's probably thought of, you know, their whole lives being lost, that he went, you know, he left high school, you know, he told me it was like Uncle Sam, the draft, all the propaganda. He left high school to, you know, underage, they didn't care. They took whoever would want to go. You know, some of his friends didn't come back. And, yeah, it's tough, right? I'm sure your father, you know, had stories, but also those probably really tough things that he saw that, you know, were hard.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's a great, great generation there. Power to you. God bless you, Mr.
Laurent. Dear.
Papa Laurent. Absolutely. All right, Faizy.
Oh, I just saw that Robbie is on hold. I think he wanted to comment on that poem. Robbie, hi.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I meant to call in earlier, but something took way longer than I wanted it to. So, but yeah, I was going to say with Laurent's poem that, it made me think of my own dad as well. Just sort of aspects of my relationship with him. And more generally, it made me think about how it talks about the questions that you don't get answered. And that's, I thought to myself, it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I think a lot of the times in the back of your mind, you kind of know that the answer might not be, or there's a fairly good chance that it's not going to be the one you want. So you kind of want to hear it for the sake of knowing what it is. But then you say to yourself, ooh, that is the answer that I didn't want to hear. So it kind of, it's a very potent mental process that goes on there when that's the case, eh? And I enjoyed the use of the image of the dragon too. I think about especially how like dragons are very ancestral, you know, they're very generational sort of beings. So I think from that aspect, it fit the poem well.
Thank you, Robbie.
You bet.
I think we do have time for one more, and I have an audio from Richard Wiseman. So I'm going to play that.
Habit revives. My blue pen bleeds onto its pinstriped yellow pad. I myself have nothing to say. Sing then of the 16-year-old saint who conquered all illusions and awoke from this, the greater dream. The time-kept red mountain was his teacher, its charnel ground cave his sanctuary from taunting boys with bloodied stones mid palms. Each morning, Arunachala fed him a handful of rice through the braceleted wrists of its favored teenage Devadasi. His samadhi-webbed flesh was meat for vermin and ants till maggots feasted on pus from his weeping sores, and still he stirred not. Sadhus pulse then circled all round, magnetized by his wordless teachings, which dispelled centuries of imagined darkness. Then coconut leaf roofed huts encamped the saint of Arunachala, and an ashram of forest aesthetics, along with householder devotees, followed the sun's antiseptic rays, repeating his solitary question, who am I, until quiescence reigned. Om. End of poem.
That was really interesting. I actually admit ignorance. I was not familiar with Ramana Maharshi, and now I will have to do a little bit of research. Daniel, what did you think of this poem? Daniel got disconnected. Robbie, let's start with you.
Well, it was very interesting to me because it made me think of, like, this is, well, Hindu, but there's, like, a semi-connection to, I used to follow more Buddhist sort of stuff, and so there's some semi-connections in terms of the traditions and that, and I had talked to somebody, I was at work, and the person that phoned in happened to be someone who used to run a podola or a Buddhist group in town. So kind of on the personal level, it reminded me of that. But it was interesting to kind of have that revived in my mind because I have some familiarity with, like, when it talks about the ashrams here and, like, some of the terminology is I am at least semi-familiar with it. So it's kind of like reigniting in my mind some of the traditions I read about. And I do go to India Fest, the two India Fests here in town every summer. And so this poem really, I thought, reflected that tone very well of that tradition. And it's definitely made me want to research both that and to kind of just look a little bit back on some of the other things that I used to do myself.
Cool. You know, and that's, it's interesting when poetry can inspire us to want to reconnect with something from our past or to look into something new. I liked the line, magnetized by his wordless teachings, because I'm curious how one absorbs such teachings, but feeling drawn to it. That line really stuck out to me. Laurent, what did you think?
The time Captain Red Mountain was his teacher, its charnel ground caves his sanctuary, and taunting boys, bloodied stones mid palms. The question, who am I, is not really meant to get an answer. The question, who am I, is meant to dissolve the questioner. Ramana Maharishi, I'm always fascinated by his poems on Eastern philosophy and meditations. He expresses the mysticism of life through the story told and his excellent notes. Outstanding piece.
Well said. And that is unfortunately all we have time for. So there will be a few carryovers. I see six carryovers. And those will be on our next show in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for calling, both of you. And Dan, I know you weren't feeling your best today, so appreciate you being here. Pushing through and having your great comments. And I've missed you all, so I'm glad to be back. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the contest. I will have more contests really soon, as soon as I judge some, because I'm at my maximum amount of contests all poetry lets me have, as I usually am. I will judge those and have some new contests up soon. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, all.